today on the Beginner Photography Podcast.
When it comes to the portrait side, I actually think that it's one of the genres that you can get started with the least amount of gear. You don't really need an expensive tripod. You really don't need huge, long, expensive lenses. A 50 millimeter lens and just your regular kit body to get you started is going to do more than enough, in my opinion. I was shooting in really good lighting conditions. I was planning my shoots in the evening in that golden hour where that light isn't super high, so you're not casting shadows straight down kind of on their eyes, so it looks like they have dark shadows under their eyes. I was shooting when the angle of light was really, really nice. And it was also bright enough that I didn't have to worry about kind of punching up my ISO where I'm getting those super grainy, gritty photos.
Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast. Today, we're talking all about social media in senior portrait photography. So let's get into it.
Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast, a weekly podcast for those who believe that moments matter most and that a beautiful photo is more than just a sum of its settings. A show for those who want to do more with the gear they have to take better photos today. And now, your host, Raymond Hatfield.
Welcome back to this week's episode of the Beginner Photography Podcast. I am your host, Raymond Hatfield, as always, and I am really excited for this episode. Before, a few weeks ago, I had never talked to a senior portrait photographer on the podcast before, and now, within a month, I've talked to two, and I feel like we're getting a pretty good grasp on what senior photography really is and how it differs from just a traditional portrait session or headshot session. It truly is an entirely different thing, and I've learned a lot from these few episodes. So I'm really excited to get into this one today with Sean Brown. And Sean Brown is a photographer who is just, I mean, has such an incredible strategy for social media to get senior portrait clients. And not only that, right? It's not even just the business side of things. It's how good of a photographer he is, right? You can see how he not only is able to take technically great photos with, you know, light and exposure, but how he then incorporates the his subject into the session itself just to make the whole thing that much better. So I'm really excited to get into that with you guys today. But first, I want to give a huge shout out for this week's 5-star iTunes review. It comes from Superi Hero, Superi Hero. I'm not sure who you are. So let me know. Get a hold of me. Send me an email, beginnerphotographypodcast.com. Let me know who you are so I can give you a proper thanks. Superi Hero says, "This podcast is by far the best I have found out there when talking about photography. It doesn't feel like a production. It just feels like somebody who cares enough to share knowledge with those who are truly interested, and I've learned a bunch in a short period of time." Again, Superi Hero, I'm not sure who you are, but please, please shoot me an email at beginnerphotographypodcast@gmail.com so that I can give you a proper thank you, because honestly, iTunes reviews are just simply the best way that you can show your support for the show. It really helps the show be found in more places. It helps iTunes show it to more listeners who would think that it's relevant. And it shows that I'm serious about this to potential guests as well, and that this isn't some fly-by-night thing. I do try to share what it is that I know, and I'm glad that you are getting a bunch out of that, because it really does me no good to just keep that all to myself. And I can't tell you how much I would have loved for some sort of online research or resource or podcast when I got started in photography myself. And honestly, it was just pretty much all in person or books, or going to a photography school. But the world of photography has changed, obviously, for the better. And with that, I have a really exciting, I have something exciting to share at the end of this interview that's a fun little challenge for you. So if you are interested and you're willing to help, then stick around for the after the interview for that. Okay, so with that, let's go ahead and get on into today's interview with senior portrait photographer Sean Brown. Sean Brown is a Portland, Oregon-based senior portrait photographer who left the safe pre-med path to pursue photography. Today, I'm excited to learn about what makes Sean make the switch, as well as the difficulties faced when learning a new technical path of photography. So, Sean, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
thanks so much for having me, Raymond. Super excited to be on the Beginner Photographer podcast today. So thanks for having me.
Of course. There's so much to unwrap, I think, just in that that little introduction right there. So for those listening, you reached out to me and you were just like, you know, I've said this before. I get lots of, I don't want to say pitches to come on the podcast, but a lot of people approach me to come onto the podcast. And very rarely do I find that the people are, you know, either have the skills or the knowledge to kind of talk about a certain topic. And very quickly, you know, looking at your website and all the information that you were putting out, especially like on Instagram, I mean, I could just tell that you do this and you go hard at it. So I'm really excited to chat with you today, especially about senior photography that I know very, very little about. But as I mentioned in the introduction, you started off pre-med, is that right?
Yeah, so I appreciate the compliments. And yeah, so I felt like, you know, my story is so like a lot of other photographers in the fact that I really never wanted to be a photographer. It was never something that I woke up one morning and when I was a kid or, you know, in high school, getting your first camera or whatever it was, and was like, I want to be a photographer. It was like photography was something that I really just did just to document my travels. Really, it was you go to a location and my souvenir to take home was always the photograph. It wasn't ever really a tangible physical item. It was those photographs that you could then print out, display in your home or whatnot. So I went to college at the University of Washington up in Seattle with the full intention of becoming a cardiologist. So went the biochemistry route, took all my pre-med classes, and really I just fell into photography. It was my freshman year, one of my friends, it was actually one of my brother's friends from high school, reached out to me and she's like, my yearbook deadline is like coming up. Can you snap a few photos for me? And my response was basically like, yeah, well, I'm a landscape photographer. So that's basically the same as a photographer, right? It's a little bit different.
Interchangeable. And, yeah.
Yeah. And so kind of that gets the ball rolling. And all of a sudden I say to myself, I go, oh, this is actually, I really kind of like interacting with the people. I'm a very people oriented person. And I was like, oh, this actually could be something, like, you know, if I market and brand myself. So I think my first year I started charging, it was like, I didn't know what to charge. This was just kind of side money at the time. I had another part-time job working with the team at Apple and kind of their retail division in high school or first year of college. And really photography was just something that, you know, if I can make a couple extra bucks on the side, that I was more than happy doing that. And all of a sudden, I think it was like 75, I think I was like $50 for my session fee and like, you know, like 25 or 50 or 75 bucks, something super cheap for like, you know, tiered number of digital images on a CD, because CD drives were still a thing back then.
Yeah.
And 2 years later or a year later, I was like, holy cow, you know, I actually didn't make that much after tax time, you know. You look at what you're bringing home and you look at what you're being taxed and then you look at how much you're spending on expenses and, you know, your website fees and all that stuff. And I was like, I'm not actually making that much. So pretty much within the course of one senior season, I went from about $75, really worked my butt off to build up a portfolio, build up a website, build up a brand is kind of that underlying thing. And went from charging about $75 to over $2,000 averages on senior sessions almost overnight. And so obviously it took a lot of hard work, but my junior year of college, I finally said, you know, this is something that I don't know if I want to pursue the medical route. You know, I'm a very independent person. There were a lot of things that I felt like I might get held back on. I have a lot of entrepreneurial tendencies to me in terms of wanting to market in a certain way or run a sale a certain way. And so I always felt like I might be held back if there were kind of, you know, people ahead of me where I was like, well, I think we could do it maybe this way. So I said, you know what, I'm just gonna jump and take the leap, go from medical, basically kind of forego the medical school route, at least for now, and go full-time photography. And so this is my seventh year in business and I've been going full-time for about the last four. And it's been the best thing that I've ever done in my life. And it's something that I hope a lot of other photographers, if whether they're on the fence, and we can talk about this more if you want to, if they're on the fence, figuring out a way to take that leap. Because I really just looked at myself and said, you know what, even if I go the medical school route and I'm successful with that or whatnot, I'm always going to have that inner regret that I didn't take the leap and I didn't go all in when I could have. And so when I saw that it was time to go all in, kind of that, you know, the diverging road, I could either go the medical school path or the photography route. I chose the photography route and I haven't regretted it one ounce since.
Wow. Well, first of all, congratulations for, you know, being full time for 4 years. That's a big milestone.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then I kind of want to know, what was the reaction of your family and friends when you were like, you know, this whole med school thing that I've been talking about for a long time, I'm just going to ditch that and I'm just going to use my camera to make money. What did they say to that? Are you ready to transform your love for photography into profit? Imagine capturing beautiful moments while bringing in a little extra money for your family each month. Sound too good to be true? With CloudSpot, it's not just a dream. Designed by photographers for photographers, CloudSpot simplifies your business. Effortlessly organize shoots, send professional contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and enjoy faster payment payouts with the lowest fees in the industry, including PayPal. Forget lost emails and messy spreadsheets. CloudSpot offers a streamlined workflow, letting you focus on the moment. And here is the clincher. Grab your free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com and you'll get access to my personal wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires. So don't let uncertainty hold you back. Embrace the future of photography business management with CloudSpot Studio. Sign up at deliverphotos.com today and transform your passion into profit.
Well, I think luckily I come from a very supportive family. So, you know, my parents were very overly supportive. And something that they always had kind of, you know, they didn't know what I was going to do necessarily. They thought I was going to do medical school, but in the end, it was really if, you know, they thought I would be successful, whatever I did, and they wished me the best success. So it wasn't ever something I'm very fortunate in that regard where I wasn't, you know, having to figure out how to appease them or anything like that. My friends actually call me SBP, short for my initials, Sean Brown Productions. And so they always, I think, knew kind of in the back of their heads, because they saw kind of how hard I was working in college to do this. So I'm not sure it shocked them quite as much, yeah. But definitely on the family side as well. But I think that's something that photographers have to overcome, where, you know, not everyone has necessarily maybe the financial stability to go full time, because it's, you know, it can be a rocky path. You have your really, it's feast or famine. You have your high seasons, you have your low seasons, where, you know, you book 10 clients in a week and then you book none for a 2 month period because it's not really time to book. So it's definitely a little bit of a, I think, a personality thing, whether you want to go full time or not. But as far as the support goes, it's more than I ever could have asked for.
That's good. That's good. That is something that I know a lot of new photographers struggle with, especially because there's so much excitement right there in the beginning.
Yep.
That it's easy to think like, oh, I'll just do this full time. Like, I'll just leave my job and I'll just do this full time. You know, that first week that you have your camera. So it's hard to imagine that. But I would imagine that, like you said, the more time that you put into it, you know, the harder that you work at it, it's easier for people to see, oh, this is serious. And it makes sense that maybe they do want to go full time. I love that. So, you know, you started off on that pre-med route. And to do that, you got to be pretty smart. You got to be much smarter than I, no doubt. But is there anything that when it came to the camera side, maybe the technicals that you struggled with most when trying to learn photography?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's with anyone. I almost still shoot exclusively natural light. It's not because I don't know how to use off camera flash. I love working in the studio with that. But it was definitely learning the light and kind of how to blend that with the camera and learn the settings. You know, you start out and all of a sudden I was like, oh, to blur out my images, I got to shoot super wide. So I think I shot my first like two or three senior sessions, like exclusively at like F1.4. And I go back and I'm like, oh, okay, maybe I can't just open up my aperture and make it look really good, because when I try to blur something out of focus, everything was out of focus.
Yeah.
So definitely like learning how to make sure that you're blending all those camera settings, like making sure that your aperture is stopped down enough so that your images aren't all blurry, making sure that your shutter speed is high enough. So that's something, I also shoot sports on the side. So I'm very fortunate that when I shoot night games, it's usually in an NFL or college stadium. So I don't have to push my ISO too hard. But that was something that I learned when I was on the high school fields. It's like, oh, crap, I can only sacrifice so much shutter speed to get the result I need. So I think understanding those settings is something that came really from the beginning. But I think it's really just mixing that light and the shutter speed that I'm still learning over time. Like I'm still learning how to shoot full sun images better. I'm still learning how to, you know, create emotion by maybe dropping that shutter speed a little bit less and getting that hair to kind of blur out as the hair is moving and stuff like that. So I think that there's definitely a understanding your trifecta, the triangle, the ISO, shutter speed, aperture is key, and kind of understanding how they interact. And really I spent like the first probably month or two just learning how that worked together when I shot manual mode. And I started out, you know, if you're just getting started, aperture priority is a fantastic mode. I love it. And that kind of helps you dial in, you know, just what you want that creative aperture to be. So if you want it everything in focus or almost nothing in focus, that sort of thing. And then look at your images, see, this is exactly what I did. See kind of how the ISO is changing from one lighting condition to another. And then also look at what your shutter speed is doing. And then all you have to do is just kind of learn to replicate that in manual mode. Our cameras are much smarter than we are sometimes. They can analyze a situation a lot quicker than we can. So use that to your advantage as you're kind of getting started.
Yeah, yeah. So how did you learn about aperture priority? How did you learn all of these technical terms? Was it YouTube? Yeah. Was it books? Like, where did you get this knowledge to move forward from?
YouTube is a godsend, I'll tell you. You literally can go on YouTube, and I think I spent hours and hours on YouTube for probably the first like year and a half of my business, just understanding, you know, how to run a business. Like, what is a photography business? Like, what do you even entail? It's like, oh, okay, you have to get a business license, you have to get tax stuff in order, you have to do all that stuff. But it was also super great from the technical side, where you say, okay, how to shoot, like, you know, you even Google how to shoot portraits, and it'll pop up 400 videos on YouTube that tell you, okay, here's what your ISO should be at to kind of start, here's what your aperture should be at to start, here's what your shutter speed should be at to start. Okay, what do these do? Aperture controls the amount of light coming in. The shutter speed controls how long that shutter is open, so how much light kind of gets in for the duration of time. And then ISO controls kind of the sensitivity of the light to the camera. So understanding how to mix all of those, if your image is too bright, increase your shutter speed or decrease your ISO. So you have to kind of think about it. And there's one actually phenomenal, I think it's a simulator out online. You can Google like ISO aperture shutter speed simulator or something like that, and actually play around with it. So even if you can't get out and outside in the door, outside, and you're stuck in the house, whether it's winter wherever you are or whatnot, play around with those settings and kind of see what it does. And I did that for hours on time just to like got a firm understanding of what could happen and what kind of each of those controls and what is the consequence or advantage of using all of those.
That's great. I've never heard of this photography simulator, but I'm gonna try to find it. And then
I want to say it's like an old, hopefully it's still around. I want to say it was like a Kodak website even.
Oh, really?
Where you could literally like play around with your settings and then like simulate taking a photo. So maybe I'll try and look that up and we can include that in the show notes for our listeners.
Of course. Yeah, no, that'd be great. That's something that over time, reaching out to the listeners of the podcast, trying to figure out what they struggle with, one of the biggest things is that they just simply don't have the time to get out and practice, you know? And that sounds like a great alternative, you know? Maybe not the perfect thing, but definitely something to increase your understanding of those settings. Totally. So that's great. Thank you for sharing that. Look that up. Put that in the show notes. So in those early days, you kind of mentioned, you know, you'd go out and you'd shoot some night games and then you'd realize, oh, you know, I gotta raise up my ISO, or I can't lower my shutter speed enough to be able to get, you know, a crisp image. So at the time, would you say that it was the gear that was the limitation at that point, or was it your knowledge of photography? Hey, Raymond here, and I know that diving into the world of editing can feel like navigating a maze, especially if you're just starting out. So that's why I created our exclusive collection of 52 Lightroom presets, absolutely free. While presets can dramatically enhance your photos, they're not a one-click solution. They're a starting point for your creativity and an opportunity to learn and grow in your editing skills. These presets work seamlessly with all versions of Lightroom, whether you're on a computer or using Lightroom Mobile. And they're designed to simplify your editing process, adding that professional touch to your photos while giving you the flexibility to fine-tune them to your taste. So if you're ready to take your photos to the next level, head over to freephotographypresets.com right now and get editing today.
I think for definitely like the sports side, you know, gear is always going to be a limitation when you're starting. And unfortunately, sports is one of the most expensive genres of photography to get into. You need really big lenses with really wide apertures and expensive camera bodies. So, you know, if you're kind of in the sports route, I say make do with what you can. If you can find afternoon games to shoot, those are probably the best lighting you're going to get to work with on kind of that high school setting. But from the portrait side, you really don't need that much to start. I think my first dozen or so senior sessions that I was booking, I was shooting with a Canon Rebel T3i and a 50mm 1.4. So, you know, you can find that kit used on eBay for not more than probably $500-$600.
I was going to go even lower than that. I was going to say
probably yeah. Less nowadays. It's probably, you know, 200 maybe max for kind of those older Rebel series. So if you're looking to get started, like, you really don't need much, because as I forget which photographer said, I think it was Ansel Adams, you know, the most important thing of a camera is what's 12 inches behind it. So it's kind of how you see the vision of the image you're trying to create. So you'd be amazed with what you can do with limited gear. So when it comes to portraits, I was shooting in really good lighting conditions. I was planning my shoots in the evening in that golden hour, where that light isn't super high, so you're not casting shadows straight down kind of on their eyes, so it looks like they have dark shadows under their eyes. I was shooting when the angle of light was really, really nice. And it was also bright enough that I didn't have to worry about kind of punching up my ISO where I'm getting those super grainy, gritty photos. And when it comes to the portrait side, I actually think that it's one of the genres that you can get started with the least amount of gear. You don't really need an expensive tripod if you're trying to shoot landscape stuff or portrait stuff like you would landscape. You really don't need huge, long, expensive lenses like you're trying to shoot sports or even weddings, maybe like the back of the chapel or something like that. A 50mm lens and just your regular kit body to get you started is going to do more than enough, in my opinion.
Hey, Raymond here, and we will get back to today's show in just a moment. You know, when I first got started in photography, one of my first sessions, I charged a family $75 for 10 images. Now, I had shot close to 150 images, though. So to let the client pick out the 10 that they wanted, I sent them all 150 with a Google Drive link. I mean, the photos were low res, of course, because, well, who would want to steal 150 low res photos? Well, just as you would expect, they screenshot more than 50 of their favorite images, unedited, of course, and then posted them to Facebook. While I was mortified and upset, this was 100% my fault. I should have used CloudSpot to send their photo gallery. CloudSpot will watermark my images, limit downloads, and even let me sell images to those clients who decided that 10 photos actually wasn't enough. And you can sign up today and get started for free by heading over to deliverphotos.com to learn more about CloudSpot and sign up. Don't lose out on another dollar. Now, back to today's interview.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think you're right. But, you know, it's just so easy to look at the pros, quote unquote, who are shooting with like these, you know, the 1DX Mark II or upcoming Mark III, you know, whatever it is, and just assume that if you're not getting the photos that you want out of that kit camera, then it has to be the camera that's better. So if that's not the case, if you're another, you know, just like me who preaches that, like, that's not the case, you know, the camera is not going to make your photos better. Aside from the lens, what would you say is like the one thing that those listening right now who are struggling to get great photos out of just their kit camera body, what's the next thing that they should be focusing on to get great photos?
Yeah, well, I think I've brought up lighting a couple times. I think that understanding lighting, you know, if you go out, I could take probably a $10,000 kit outside. And when I say kit, that's basically, you know, camera body, lens, if you need it, lighting accessories, that sort of thing. But, you know, if I'm shooting at noon and I don't know how to properly light a scene, if you're using off-camera flash or if you're all natural light like I am, and don't know how to use a reflector to kind of help fill in those shadows and stuff, you're going to get really drastically different results than if you shot that same image at like 5 p.m. So I think understanding lighting is the very, very first thing. So that's the first thing that I think about when I'm planning out my shoots or going out to do a shoot is, what kind of lighting am I going to be working with? Because you can take a really expensive kit and get really bad photos at high noon, take that same kit or a beginner kit, kind of that Rebel intro series, and take really great photos at 5 p.m. just by waiting a few hours when the light dips down. The next thing I think is from the portrait side is just connecting with your clients. So one of the very first things that I look at when, you know, if somebody asks me for a portfolio reviewer, especially in the beginning when I was looking at my own images, was, how am I connecting with the client? What kind of emotion am I generating from those images? Because if they're very closed off, if you maybe haven't said a word to them and you just stick a camera in your face and they're like, all right, smile, you're not going to get necessarily the best reaction out of them. So the first thing that I do is all of my senior clients get hair and makeup done. And I actually sit in the salon with them. I'm not the one doing hair and makeup. I can barely put myself together, much less try and make them look good. But I basically sit while they're doing their hair and makeup and just have a conversation with them. Just get to know them, get to know their interests, get to know their hobbies, what their career goals are, you know, like what do they want to do after high school? What do they do for fun? Those sorts of things. So that when you're shooting with them, you make it more of a conversation rather than a shoot is kind of how I look at it. So I'm constantly interacting with my seniors, making sure that they're comfortable. And I think that's the other big thing is, so lighting, connecting with your clients, making sure you're putting in an effort to get to know them so they're comfortable behind the camera, because a relaxed client is going to photograph a lot better than someone who's super tense, as I'm sure you've probably found in life.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And then that last one, in terms of like getting those great images, is figuring out how to take your images to the next level. So one of the things that I really like to do when I'm shooting, say, like natural sessions especially, is introducing some movement to the images, kind of bringing that life to them. So rather than just having a static portrait, something that adds movement, whether that's the wind catching their dress or maybe they're running through a field or something like that, learning how to photograph that movement is going to help a lot in terms of the outlook or the outcome of your portrait, just because it's going to bring more life to it. So those are three simple tips. You don't even need to do gear. That's basically just a matter of you know, practicing, getting out there, working with clients. And if you're getting started, don't try and do all three of these things at once. Pick one that you're going to do one day and really focus on. Pick one that you're going to focus on really intently the next day, the third, the day after that. And then over time, you're going to just work all three of those in, so that when you are photographing your clients, it's going to be more of a seamless transition for you to try to introduce all three of those things into that.
Gosh, that was great. That was a super simple three-step essentially process that, like you said, didn't even revolve around gear. That was...
Yeah, it's nice not to spend money on gear you don't need, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I like gear that I don't need sometimes.
I do too. That's I'm a gear junkie. Yeah.
That's a, definitely a problem. That's definitely a problem of mine. I wanted to ask, as talking about, you know, being with them in the salon and like getting to know who it is that they are, you have an interesting little blurb on your website that says, Sean brings every one of his seniors' personalities to life through their photographs and makes sure that each photo session is unique to you. So my question is, I can see how you do that, like how you ensure that their personalities come out, because when you spend time with them, you get to know their personalities. But how do you ensure that you can do that? Let me rephrase that. How do you ensure that you can capture those unique photos but still remain consistent to your shooting style and editing? Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I think that it really just boils down to client education. And what I mean by that is every senior that I work with, I keep a super, almost like a kind of an in-depth conversation planning session going with them. And what's great about that is that I do it all, you know, you don't have to do this if you're kind of starting out, but as somebody who's taking on a higher volume and it's really their shooting season is about 3.5-4 months long, maybe max, I'm cramming a lot of sessions in. So it was overwhelming to me, but I use a studio management software and all I have to do is basically put out a series of emails. So those emails could be, you know, what do I encourage my clients to wear? How should they be showing up, you know, prepping? So sending me a senior style questionnaire, which basically just has all of the info that I want to know from them. So their hobbies, and think of them as talking points. So any talking point that you can have with your clients during your session, I'm asking in that online questionnaire that they're filling out. And then what I do is I actually have them text me outfits of, text me photos of their outfits laid out on the floor so that I can see everything pieced together. So I have an idea of what I'm working with. And part of that senior style questionnaire is, you know, if they're really looking for golden hour images, because like their dream senior portrait has been dancing in a field during the golden hour, go figure. That's like kind of the go-to thing for seniors nowadays. I'm able to make sure that I am saying, okay, well, let's try and pair this type of wardrobe with this location. So you're not necessarily telling them you have to wear this exact outfit, but you're giving them an idea of what's going to translate well on the camera using your expertise, and also making sure that they are able to introduce their own personality, their own style, because if it's a style of dress they would never wear, that's not going to look like them in the photos. And mom's going to be like, this is not my daughter. But if you allow them to have kind of a say in that of bringing the dress, and, you know, you can give examples of color scheme. I like bright colors. So obviously, you know, if you can wear like a red dress in a field, I'm going to prefer that over to kind of the white dress, just because that resonates with my style a little bit more. So I'll give them kind of, I'll push them in that direction a little bit, but I'm never going to say you have to wear this, or we have to photograph this location, or we have to photograph this style. It's more of an open conversation the whole time so that they feel comfortable in those locations is exactly what they envisioned. And really it just comes down to when you capture their personality, it's, you know, when mom looks at a photo and you capture their natural laugh because you made a stupid joke during your session and all of a sudden they laughed and you were ready with your camera, mom's going to say, that's the one, that's their laugh. So I think it really just comes down to making sure that you're educating, you're guiding your clients, but you're never kind of overbearing on them. You're never telling them exactly what has to happen. It's almost like an open creative dialogue between you and the client. So they're telling you their vision, and you as the photographer, the expert, has to figure out, okay, what locations are going to go well with this outfit that they really want to wear, because mom sees them in it all the time and they just bought it and it's their favorite outfit, but it's their style completely, that sort of thing. I just encourage you to have an open dialogue with your clients and your seniors is, I think, the biggest thing.
Right. Oh, that's so smart. That's so smart. I think many photographers who would have read that little snippet from your website would probably be thinking to themselves, oh, that sounds so overwhelming. You know, like every client I have to do a completely different shoot. It has to be totally different. But the way that you laid it out, which is like, so correct me if I'm wrong, you know, you figure out the type of location that they're looking for. You work with that wardrobe that it is that they're looking for. And now you have those talking points. And then that is what makes it unique. But your shooting style isn't really changing. Is that right? It's the same,
yeah,
essentially poses and way that you light. And
totally. Camera. Yeah. Because, you know, they're coming to you because they like your style. They're not,
yeah,
you know, if you cater to everyone, you cater to no one. Or if you market to everyone, you market to no one. And so it's really key to make sure that your business and your brand are staying the same. But you also want to make sure that, you know, if somebody is a sports player and they want to be photographed at the track and stuff like that, well, there's a way to do that in your style. You don't have to completely change how you're photographing. Like, you know, I'm not going to be hauling out strobes to light that. I might on occasion if I feel drawn to that. But as a natural light shooter, they're expecting kind of those lighter portraits without kind of that heavy off-camera flash. It's not really a thing in this geographic region that people are seeking. Mm-hmm. In other parts of the country, they might really expect that off-camera flash where they're like, if you're not shooting it in this style, I don't want to book with you. Yeah. And so there's a place for each photographer's style in the world. And it's really just staying true to that, because over time, as you stay true to your style, that's what's going to build a brand. So, you know, when seniors in my area, they look at an image, they know that it was shot by me versus another photographer who's going to shoot in a completely different style. Maybe they're editing differently. But if all of a sudden I was to edit differently one session to try and capture their personality or use a different lighting style every other session to try and capture their personality once again, that's not staying true to my vision as an artist, but it's also not staying true to my brand. And it's not something that I enjoy. I'm not trying to appease others by at the sacrifice of my own vision or my own kind of creative outlook, so to speak.
And yet the photos still feel completely unique and original, yep, to them. I love that. I love that. Awesome. Let's kind of go back. I want to talk a little bit more about the business side of things now, because right there in the beginning, you shared this huge piece of knowledge that you went from $50 to $75 sessions to, you know, upwards of $2,000. Now, starting off cheap, we all do. And I know that Carrie, she's listening right now. She's a listener of the podcast. She's listening, and I can only imagine her right now just like screaming at her phone, begging me to ask you this question, which is, why do you think many photographers struggle to break past that $75 price point and get to, say, where you are making, you know, six figures a year?
Totally. I think it boils down to that fear, that that inner voice in their head saying, if I do raise my prices, what if nobody books? Or what happens if I raise my prices and all of my clients go away? You know, what happens if I raise my prices and I completely price myself out of my market or whatnot? So there are a bunch of fears that I think that we have when starting. And I had those same fears. In fact, I raised my prices for the class. I forget what class it was, but you know, whatever it corresponded to. And I don't think I got inquiries, but I didn't get a booking for like 3 or 4 months. And as photographers, that can be super scary, like real scary. But then all of a sudden, I just kind of stuck in there. I stayed true to the brand. So we'll kind of dive into that as well, because I don't think that you can achieve luxury prices. Obviously, I think that your work has to be at a certain standard, or you have to be able to brand yourself and market and kind of be able to justify those high prices that your clients are willing to pay, rather than, you know, a $50 photographer who's just handing them a disc of images. And there's nothing wrong with that business model. It's just, it's a different business model. Something that I look back on and say, you know, I'd rather would work just as much, if not a little bit less, and make the same amount, if not more, per session. But it comes down to breaking down those fears and understanding that, you know, if somebody doesn't book in 3 months, that was okay, because last year I really didn't book for the same amount of time. It was just not the booking season and that sort of thing. And you are going to lose your client base, because those $50 clients are never going to be your $500 clients or those $5,000 clients. But that's okay, because once you establish yourself at a higher price in the market, what's going to happen is you're going to start attracting clients that are also in that price point, versus trying to go up over time where, yes, you might hold on to some of those clients, but those clients that were originally paying $200 for their session, you know, when you get up to 2000, they're likely not going to be with you anyways. You probably, you know, unless, you know, it's a very rare client where they're super, super, super loyal and will do absolutely anything for you. A lot of people might just not be able to afford that. So it's okay to jump your prices. It's okay to lose your client base. As long as you kind of keep in mind what clientele you're targeting or what clientele you're marketing to. And kind of going back on brand, this is something that I did from the very beginning. I completely revamped my website. I went with a completely different look and feel. I started understanding why I believe senior portraits are so important. I talked a little bit about, you know, what I'm going to do that's different. So I think those 3 to 5 differentiating factors that's different from you, from your competition, is a really great way to set yourself apart. So you have to justify why you're the higher value or whatnot. And let me just tell this for the photographers who might be thinking about jumping their prices, but aren't necessarily are on the fence maybe of doing so. One of the things that, you know, in my college career, I took a psychology class or sociology, psychology. It was one of the two. And one of the things that we do as humans is something called a heuristic. And essentially what a heuristic is it's a shortcut that your brain makes. So what happens is your brain over time compiles a bunch of series of events to formulate a conclusion. So rather than having to take the full path, it can go from basically, instead of going, say, point A to B to C to D to E, you can essentially go from point A to E much quicker. It's kind of like a straight line. So, you know, it's much quicker to go diagonally through, you know, if you were running from one street corner to another, it's much quicker to go diagonally than it is to cross one way and then cross another. Mm-hmm. Your brain does that automatically with all the information it's taking in. And one of those heuristics is price and value. So if you go to, let's say, Walmart, I like to use the example of a tripod because we're all photographers, and I personally done this a million times before I finally learned that it is good to invest in a tripod for your travel stuff. So you're not in Germany trying to buy a tripod when your $30 tripod's broken. But what you do as a photographer is you can walk into a Walmart or a photo store and they have the $300 tripod and the $30 tripod. Without even knowing anything about the brand, about the manufacturer, about what parts it's made out of, which one would you say is kind of more quality, Raymond?
The $300 tripod, of course.
The $300 tripod. It's the same thing. Our brains do that automatically. They associate that higher value with a higher quality. And so as photographers, if you are priced in that low end or that median end, you might be the best photographer in the world, but that client who's looking to invest in their portrait experience isn't going to book you. Your work could be absolutely phenomenal, but they're going to go with that higher priced photographer 9 times out of 10 because they're going to associate a higher value in some capacity. It might not even be the quality of the work, but it might be maybe customer service, a certain product that you're offering. Maybe that photographer is offering high quality archive digital or archive quality photo products for their clients that they can't get anywhere else. That medium price photographer, they might be really good, but if they're priced medium, then their clients are going to associate that with mediocrity. And so no matter how good you are or what quality of work you're producing, those prices might actually be holding you back in a brand sense, where those your clients might not actually associate you with being a high-end photographer or a high-quality photographer if you're pricing yourself low, just because it's something our brain does, and it's very hard to rewire that. And unfortunately, you're not going to be able to rewire that in your clients no matter how hard you try, because over hundreds of years, we as humans have done that. It's ingrained in us. It's part of our survival mechanisms, really. So I just urge you, if you know you are worried about taking the leap, think about it from that sense. Is that no matter how hard you work, if you're still pricing yourself low, you know, you miss out on a huge client base, or clients valuing your work almost just as much as you do, simply because you're holding yourself back with pricing.
Oh, geez. That is a great example right there. And like you said, without knowing anything about these tripods, it's so easy to form an opinion on them. Two completely fictional, like, fictional tripods, like they don't even exist, and yet I already made up my mind as far as to which one was better. That's really interesting. So surely the answer to raising your prices isn't just go from $75 to, you know, $1,000 overnight. That's not going to bring success. There has to be, as you said, something extra, right? So for you, how important are physical products, you know, to your sales strategy? Is it I'll just let you answer that. How important are physical products to your sales strategy?
Super, super important. So I'm really grateful to work with a few professional labs that I trust immensely. And so if you know you're a starting photographer, start Googling what photo labs. I don't know if we're allowed to say it on the podcast, but
yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I love White House Custom Color and Pro DPI. Those are kind of my go-to photo labs from the senior side, just because I know that they provide a product that individuals can't get anywhere else. So products are super essential to my business model. And the reason is I'm priced at such a price point that if I did not include a physical product that they are able to touch and feel and interact with and work with, there's no way that people would be paying me for what they're paying me. You know, they're not going to justify that if I'm just sending them a shoot proof gallery. No matter, you know, I could be the best photographer in the world, but on the portrait side, they aren't going to see any difference between a digital file and a digital file when it's at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, if you sit down with them and you hand them an album that, you know, you say, oh, and here's my leather bound album or whatever it is that you sell, they're going to be comparing that in their minds when you say album. Oh yeah, that's the stuff that I print out for grandma at Shutterfly. Nope. It's a little bit different. So you have to get those products into their hands. So what I do is I actually showcase that periodically on my social media, on my website, on all of my marketing materials that I send client inquiries. I explain through photos what those products that they can expect are. And I actually don't allow any of my seniors to walk out with just digital products. I actually include a print piece in every single package or collection that I create. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is that it creates a psychology with them that you're associating a high quality piece of physical product with high quality digitals as well. And so you're kind of building on that level of experience, really, because, you know, if you were to spend a bunch of money on something and only get a download, it's going to be a much different experience than if you get to unbox, you get to sit there, unpackage it and all of that. So products are an essential piece to my business. And I think that's one of the quickest way to jump your prices is to include an album. Mm-hmm. And include a piece of wall art, if that's popular in your area. Figure out what products you can include that they can't get anywhere else, namely through a professional print lab that you probably have access to as a photographer, and introduce those into your pricing and just see what happens.
Yeah, geez, that's great. I've often heard, you know, obviously I understand the power of print and how it feels in your hands. And it is really powerful, but I never heard anybody equate it to, you know, once you have this wonderful, you know, high quality print in your hand, you're also going to associate that digital file as high quality as well. That's a really interesting way of looking
at it. And just to kind of build off of that, you know, if you are just giving off digital files, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. It's definitely a business model. But when you have the chance to sit down with your clients and to serve them, I do all in-person sales. So actually after every senior session, I meet with my clients in person and am able to actually hand the products results to them. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the things I learned working with Apple, is that Apple actually goes in and adjusts their screens to a certain angle, encouraging their clients to interact with the computer, or their customers to interact with the computers, just in an effort to touch. So there's something very powerful about touching and feeling the products and building that physical interaction with the product. So if you're not sitting down with your clients, or if you don't have time for in-person sales, maybe throw an album into your car so that after the session you can show them what the album looks like and that sort of thing. But if you are on the edge and kind of wanting to introduce those products, get them into your clients' hands, because it does create a very powerful emotion, and their images are going to be valued at a much, their digital images are going to be valued much higher because they have an interaction with a high quality, tangible print item.
Yeah, I love that. So if, because I'm thinking right now, there's another listener, Kimberly, she's listening, and she's been thinking about doing in-person sales, but she also homeschools all of her children. So time, I think, is limited for her. So I'm going to ask this question for her, but I could be completely wrong. So you mentioned there, like bringing an album to like a senior session to show it at the end of it. Is that album that you're showing a completed album that you would have given to a client, or is this like a studio album with a variety of different images?
I think that, you know, both methods are totally correct. I personally like it just to be one client so that they can kind of see and envision how an album's put together. Mm-hmm. But going off that point where she says, you know, I have kids at home, or I'm homeschooling, I don't have time to do in-person sales. If you're shooting, you know, let's say that you're priced at, let's just use simple numbers. So let's say that you're priced at $200, and that's what your session rate is. Okay, to make $1,000, you now have to be out of the house shooting 5 different sessions, versus had you shot one session at $1,000 and sat down with them one time for about a 30 to 45, 60 minute ordering session, mm-hmm. you now have really actually saved yourself 3 days of work.
Yeah.
So you're now actually freeing yourself up more simply because you're changing your business model up a little bit. So, you know, if you don't have time, it's not necessarily that you don't have time, because you're not going to book as many clients at a higher price point. You know, if I were to charge $200, I'd never have time to do anything. I'd be, you know, everything would be everywhere. I would have no time to organize everything. But by raising my prices, I'm actually able to spend less time, make more money doing it, and actually serve my clients better.
Oh, that's so great. I'm writing that down because that was fantastic. Sorry. Okay. Yes. I'm a terrible writer, and it just looks like chicken scratch.
I am too. My girlfriend, I write the slowest of anybody in this world, probably.
Then you would have been a perfect doctor. Man, you went down the wrong career path. Oh, that's great. Yeah. You don't have time not to do in-person sales is what I wrote down. Cause that just, that really makes a lot of sense. And once again, I'd never heard of it about it, you know, explained that way. So thanks. Thank you for that. This is just full of great little tidbits of information. I got my next question here for you is about the world that seniors live in today, right? Because you have to be somewhat a part of that to try to get in front of them. And this world that they live in today is completely foreign to me, because when I was a senior in high school, we just had like the Motorola Razr, and like that was it. We had
Super popular back when I was in high school. Yeah,
I loved them. They were so cool. It was so cool. But
you see, they brought back the Razr with the double touch screen.
I want it so bad, but there's no way that I'm going to spend like $1,600 on a phone. That's ridiculous. But back then there was no Facebook, there was no Twitter, like there was MySpace, but you had to do that on a computer. So like it wasn't all like mobile based, it wasn't on a phone. So when it comes to marketing yourself, how important is social media to you, and where do you find the most successful platform to be?
Yeah, so I think social media as a whole is possibly one of the best things that's ever happened in terms of photographers and marketing, because social media is so visual that now all of a sudden we can reach a ton of clients, and we don't have to maybe put out advertisements or print out a bunch of comp cards in the hopes that our clients will hand them out for us. Now with Instagram and Facebook or Twitter and all these other different platforms, we're able to get in such a in front of such a wider audience and share our work visually, because we are visual storytellers. We're visual business people. That's what our kind of our product is to an extent. And so I think that social media is an amazing thing, just to put that out there. But Instagram has been most successful for me, obviously, you know, as Instagram organic reach kind of starts to dwindle, and we don't have to get into that too much because that's kind of more technical. But essentially, as you start reaching less people, just like Facebook reaches less people now, you know, that platform might change. But for me, Instagram has been a great way to not only showcase my work in a portfolio that's relevant, so you're posting your most recent work, but there's your seniors are also on it all the time. And one of the things that I think digital products have become so popular is because of the want to share on social media. So it almost becomes a sort of social currency for them, the number of likes that they get. So if you're able to provide a product that now is able to help them, you know, post to social media and showcase their senior session digitally, I think there's nothing wrong with pricing your digital products as a premium product as such. So I think it's actually elevated the photography industry in that extent, as long as you're pricing your products appropriately. For me, you know, you asked a little bit about interacting with the seniors, or like, you know, how does social media serve that purpose? For me, I love integrating video into all my sessions. So something I started about a year ago was actually, I never thought I was going to, but I actually started vlogging my senior sessions, and it seems crazy. And essentially what it is it's just a video blog. So it's like, you know, the biggest YouTubers in the world, the seniors are not looking toward like their favorite celebrity. You know, you could have asked a senior girl 30 years ago or whatever, and her celebrity crush might have been George Clooney. Now these girls are saying like David Dobrik, who's like this YouTuber. And so it's interesting to see, you know, Hollywood, it's changed a little bit. It's they're interacting with the celebrities, those YouTube Instagram influencers, so to speak. And what they've done so well is they've been able to put a face to their brand and connect with their viewers and their watchers so well. And as photographers, we kind of have to take notice in the senior world when that starts to happen. So one of the things that I've done is vlogging, and basically trying to put more of a face and become more of a presence, because that's the type of content they're consuming. So not only does it showcase my work, it shows them exactly what I'm like to work with, how it is behind the scenes of their sessions, and kind of tears down those objections that they might have, where we love Sean's work, but we don't necessarily know who he is. We don't know if we're going to connect with him. So if you're not doing video, you don't have to go full YouTuber like I did, because that's crazy when you're starting out. But just a simple Instagram story or an Instagram live, so that people can get to know you, what you're like. You basically want to set it up so that even if they've never met you, they know you when they meet you because of the content that you've been putting out and kind of how they've been consuming and how you've been engaging and interacting with them as seniors. So I love social media for that extent. And Instagram, I think, is one of the best platforms that merges that photo and that video, both through Instagram stories. So kind of, you know, that raw, candid content with the more curated, say, IGTV long form content, where it might be a little bit more produced or something like that.
Are these vlogs that you do? And I've seen a few, and they're tons of fun to watch, because like you said, it does give a great idea of the personality and what it's like working with you. Is that like a premium upcharge, or is that just you just show up and they expect it to happen?
So I actually, one of my models in my business is that I have a senior team. And essentially that's just a rep ambassador program for my girls. So I actually include it for all of them. And one of the things that I offer for people who book by a certain date, kind of that early bird blog session. So it's for them to book early for a select number of sessions. And really the reason for that is that, you know, you don't want to be completely out of pocket with charging for videographer, editing costs, all of that stuff. So I do it as an incentive, and basically just built it into my marketing budget last year. But, you know, I'd say start out with a few, see how it's going to go. If you're really crazy, you could even do it yourself, that sort of thing. But definitely starting out you know, just see how it works into your business if this is something that you ultimately want to do.
Yeah. Oh, man, that sounds like so much fun. As I said, I'm going to have to link to your YouTube videos in the show notes, because I watched the one where you were doing like a scavenger hunt downtown.
Yes.
With your seniors. And that was just something that actually, I think I watched that on Instagram, and it was something that I never would have thought of, like, to do on my own. And maybe it'd be different for brides, but maybe it wouldn't. Who knows? Yeah. Maybe I'll just have to try.
You know, like a little vlog of the wedding day going on. Right. I think that would actually be a fantastic idea. I don't know if any photographers that are doing that right now. So maybe Raymond Hatfield Photography could be the very first to do
that. Yeah. Oh, geez. Gosh, that's so much work. That'd be so much work. But yeah, definitely something to think about. I like that. Thank you. As a senior photographer, I always get excited when I talk to a genre who I know really nothing about personally. I love to ask this question, which is essentially, what is your job, right? So, like, what is the one thing that you need to do or to capture at a session to consider the entire session a success?
Yeah, so it comes back to what I believe in, and that's being a senior photographer who captures your authentic personality, but also embraces your natural beauty. So one of the things that my job is in a social media world, kids these days are so inundated by different kind of idealistic representations of what they need to look like or how they should look, whether that be, you know, overly photoshopped models or models that adhere to a standard that's just not natural for the most part. And as society, we've kind of come to embrace this as quote unquote beauty, or quote unquote how you should look. And so one of the things as a senior photographer that I think that we are tasked with, and whether you choose to believe this or not, I think that this is just inherent to the industry that we are in and the clientele that we serve, is we need to build confidence. We need to showcase that natural beauty that they hold. So one of the things that I'm doing is with every senior session, I don't consider it a success until they look at their images and say, I can't believe that's me. I can't believe, like, you made me look that way. Building that confidence. So I'm not changing how they look. I'm not photoshopping them. I'm not putting obnoxious amounts of makeup on them. I actually let them dictate how much makeup they wear during their senior sessions and what style they go for. But one of the things that I want to do is I want to build that confidence. And it's in one of the testimonial videos a couple years back that I put together, basically just asking a series of questions and editing it together as kind of a testimonial reel. And one of the things that one of the girls said was, I was able to watch my confidence grow. And that's something I think as senior photographers, that's ultimately my why. It's to capture their authentic personality, but it's also to see your confidence grow. And for you to be able to have a tool that breaks down everything that social media told them, and says, no, you are perfect the way that you are, and it's okay to be different, or it's okay, you know, if it's so funny. One of the questions I ask is, what's what's something that you're self-conscious about? And it's so funny to hear what people say. Like, one of them is like a crooked smile, yet you look at them and their smile's perfect. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that, you know, I come in going into the session is the first time that they crack a smile during their photo shoot is, oh, I love your smile. That's, you have like the best smile ever. Stuff like that, where you as a photographer, somebody who is an objective party, you know, their mom is gonna tell them that they're great and wonderful and all that. But to have an external party do that. And as a male photographer, I have to be super careful about this. So I'm not saying don't be like creepy dude status or anything like that, but do it in, do it in a way that is like, you know, a friend, or if you're an older male photographer, do it as like something that maybe a dad would say to their daughter or something like that. Do it in a way that's obviously comfortable for them, but do it in a way that also helps to build that confidence in them. And I think that that's something that as senior photographers, it's such a powerful tool and something that I really strive. You asked about what do I deem to be a successful session? And really, I think it boils down to that.
Yeah, the confidence. Wow. How, when, sorry, I'm trying to formulate my next thought here, which is trying to break that down. I guess you would get all of that information. So you're essentially doing this all like from the beginning, from that questionnaire that you send out, from that time that you spend in the salon chair with them talking about them and their goals and their hopes and their dreams, so that by the time you get in front of that camera, you've already primed them to build that confidence. It's not like empty, like, oh yeah, you're so beautiful, just keep working it and stuff like that. It's like genuine yep. stuff.
Exactly. It comes from knowing your client.
I can tell that you work hard, Sean. I can tell that you work hard with
me. I try. Try, Raymond.
I got one last visual question for you here, which is when I, and this is a new question for me, so tell me how you like how the question is phrased and whatnot, but when I think of like street photography, I think of, or maybe you would think, you know, a strong composition, black and white, you know, maybe obscured faces. When you think of senior photography, what image pops into your head?
I think of an image that's candid, that is not overly posed. So I think of something that's maybe somebody dancing in a, I keep going back to that field, that, you know, hypothetical field that they have. Somebody who's dancing in that field, wind blowing in their hair, golden light behind them. I think that's what our seniors come to expect. They don't want something that is that old studio model where they come in, sit down, pose like this, put the rose here, that sort of, they don't look at that anymore. They yeah. want something that is almost like what they see from their favorite Instagram influencers. Like, you know, when they see a Free People image, which is a clothing line, they want those naturally candid photos. And that's something that I always see people asking for in my work. So it's something that it's not posed. It's not overly edited. They want something that's more authentic, more natural to them. They want something that is just something that they can't produce from an iPhone. So, you know, if you're introducing that sun flare, that's something that they think is really cool because they can't do that with an iPhone. So it's like these fun little things that we look at as photographers and are like, oh, that's just, you know, everyday shooting for us. But they think that's really cool. And, mm-hmm. you know, they're like, oh, I want to shoot at golden hour. It's like, okay, we're going to shoot at golden hour anyways, because that's yeah. like when the best light is. So I think of golden hour, fields, wind blowing, candid, not posed. Those are kind of the four or five things that I think it boils down to, is like what seniors expect.
Yeah. I, as you were explaining that, I could form that picture in my head and I could see it. That's great. I got one last question for you. You've been super gracious with your time. I don't want to take up all of it. Was there anything early on that you had overlooked in the world of photography that now maybe you wish that you didn't?
That's an awesome question. Is there one thing that I wish that I had known that I might have overlooked? I think I wouldn't say that I necessarily overlooked it, but I think that it's something that I had wished that I had done earlier. And that's something that is meeting with other photographers in person, networking, being able to, you know, have a community of photographers, not just online, but also photographers that you can meet up with, go to their location or whatever when you're not shooting a session, brainstorm, have a creative shoot together. I think that there's so much power and importance to that, where some of my favorite images or favorite things that I've learned have literally just been from hanging out with another photography friend. And the reason for that is because as photographers, we're largely working alone for the most part. We don't have necessarily peers. I mean, if you're in a larger portrait studio, you might, or a larger wedding studio where you have second shooters and third shooters and all that stuff. But as portrait photographers, we don't necessarily have a way to bounce ideas off organically. So in-person events, conferences, trade shows, workshops, I think are super important, because it's just a time for you to sit down and learn things that you might not even have had, you know, brewing in the back of your head. You might have overlooked it, but maybe a colleague asks a question and that sparks an idea for you. So I think that meeting people in person, I didn't realize just how quickly that accelerates your learning and your growth as a photographer. And so that's something that if you haven't built out kind of a network, maybe it's just an online photographer friend that you connect with really well, you know, figure out a time to go down to WPPI or a shoot in Florida if you're on the East Coast during the winter, where maybe it's not super nice where you are, do a shoot with them and just see kind of like play around creatively with what you can, what you can learn that's different than what you already know.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's so exciting. This year, I'm definitely having a push towards being more. Oh, my iPad thought that I said, "Hey Siri," but I definitely didn't. And now it's saying everything that I said. It said deadly having a push. Okay, sorry. That's something that I'm going to be doing more of this year that I'm really excited to be doing. That was one of the things that I had a lot of pushback in the beginning. And I don't know why. Maybe it's just like insecurities, you know, like other photographers have to be better than us. And then now it gets to this point where it's like, oh, none of that matters. Like, we just all kind of see things differently. You know, it's not that somebody's better than somebody else, but now building that that relationship, that connection, that's so exciting. So I look forward to this year, and thank you for setting me off on that path for sure. But John, I've taken up more time of yours than I said that I would.
So no, not at all. I loved it.
I want to be mindful of that. So before I let you go, can you share with the listeners where they can find and follow you online?
Totally. Yeah. So you can find me. My website is seanbrownproductions.com. If you're a photographer, you can add the /photographers to that. It takes you to a page specifically for you guys. And Sean is spelled the Irish way. Scene, S-E-A-N. So if you guys are typing that in, or you can also find me, I'm most active on Instagram, Sean Brown Productions on there. That's kind of where you can find me.
Perfect. And of course, I'm going to add links to all of those places in the show notes so that everybody can find you. So Sean, again, man, thank you so much for coming on and sharing everything that you did. I had a great time chatting with you today.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, Raymond. It was super fun to sit down and just kind of chat with you and your listeners for a little bit.
What'd you think about that? As somebody who's a wedding photographer and not a senior photographer, I still got a ton out of this interview. My biggest takeaway, from talking with Sean, for sure, is just how Sean caters every session to the senior to make it just absolutely unique to them. And that is something that we can all do, no matter what it is that you shoot. You know, it seems easier to correlate this with photographing subjects, but really you gotta ask yourself, who are you photographing this shot for, no matter what it is? And if it's for yourself, then that's fine. How can you make this shot unique for you? You know, I think of the Grand Tetons here in the States, and I mean, those are some of the most photographed mountains in the world, right? And everybody seems to kind of take the same photo. How can you make that unique for yourself? How can you get a unique perspective for yourself, you know? And then again, when you're photographing people, you know, it's just, you know, with Sean, he realized that this is a big moment for seniors. And being able to put them in control makes the entire experience so much more memorable for them, which, you know, that's a good thing. You know, as a service provider, you want to make what it is that you do extremely memorable. So, by the way, I have put the link to the camera simulator that Sean talks about in the show notes. It's made by Canon, and they did a great job putting this thing together. So if you are listening in Apple Podcasts, you can just swipe up on your podcast player, and then you're going to find the link for that. Okay, it is challenge time. You heard me talk in the beginning of the interview that I have a challenge for you if you choose to accept it. Right now, I'm working on my first course on editing in Lightroom, and that is going to be out next month in March, but I need your help. So we've all been in this place where we see a photo in our head, we capture it, and then we look at it, and it just falls a bit flat, you know? You know that it can be a real winner if edited right, but you're just not sure what it is that you want to do in Lightroom. Well, here is your chance to find out. If you have one of those photos, if you're thinking of one of those photos, I want you to email me that photo and I will edit it for the upcoming editing course. You know, show you exactly what it is that I would do to a photo and really how to make your photos pop. So if you want to participate, send me your raw photo to beginnerphotographypodcast@gmail.com with the subject, here's my raw, and I will be picking a few. So get it in and I will do my best. Well, that is it for this week. Until next week, I want you to make do. I want you to make more. I want you to do more. And I want you to make do with the gear that you got, because I promise you, it's better than you think. All right, that's it. I'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. If you enjoy the show, consider leaving a review in iTunes. Keep shooting, and we'll see you next week.